And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget you can take the show with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Well, yesterday I was under the impression, having watched some of the media coverage over the weekend and listening to all of the experts, that we were going to see Black Monday 2.0 on the stock market. This is, of course, as it relates to President Donald Trump's sweeping tariff plan that was announced last week. It officially went into effect on Saturday. We saw major market sell-offs on both Thursday and Friday of last week. He made the announcement, Wednesday afternoon in the Rose Garden. And Thursday and Friday were not great on the stock market by any stretch. And I was under the impression yesterday was supposed to be a bloodbath. And while yesterday, the day started off low, ended totally fine. And looking at futures this morning, Dow futures are up 700 points. S&P futures up almost 70. That's 1.3%. NASDAQ futures up 200 points. A little over 1.15% in the NASDAQ futures this morning. So it seems like the idea that the stock market was going to plummet and cease to exist all because of Donald Trump has not come to fruition at all, to the chagrin of the experts. And I spent a lot of time watching. I watched CNBC and Fox Business pretty much all day yesterday. I had it on in the background. And it seems to me that what you're watching go on right now is individuals that are using their financial expertise and trying to predict a market that is very unpredictable during this Trump presidency with these sweeping tariffs. Now, I caught an interview yesterday. It's a lengthy interview. I want to try and play most of it for you here this morning. Peter Navarro, who is really the architect behind these reciprocal tariffs that were introduced by the administration last week, did a lengthy interview with CNBC yesterday morning ahead of the market open. And I haven't heard anybody lay out the Trump tariff plans as succinctly as Navarro. And I guess it makes sense. He's the guy that, you know, put this whole thing together. He's the one that's got the president's ear on this tariff situation. He went on CNBC with a very hostile crowd. You can tell the disdain that the CNBC hosts continue to have for Peter Navarro. I thought he laid out the argument as best as I've seen anybody do it. And as we look at the futures this morning, doesn't seem like a Black Monday 2.0 didn't happen. And futures are up a big time this morning, 700 points as we just looked at it on the Dow, almost 2 full percentage points. In pre-market trading ahead of the market open coming up here in just a little bit. So I want to play this for you, Peter Navarro on CNBC yesterday. I'll jump in plenty of times. A very interesting interview. Take a listen to this.
And a number of countries reportedly reaching out to negotiate tariffs with President Trump over the weekend. Joining us now with the latest, President Trump's senior trade and manufacturing advisor, Peter Navarro. And given the backdrop, Peter, of what we've seen, the tumult in the markets, and the S&P could theoretically be in bear market territory. And I know you make the distinction between Main Street and Wall Street, but obviously they're interconnected. So to get the real story on how many countries are calling and on whether the president is actually agreeable is important, because we've heard all these countries are making the phone call, but then we hear that maybe the president isn't interested at this point. Can you clear that up?
Sure, Joe, but let me first take you back in a time capsule, because this feels a lot like the day after the election in 2016. And I don't know if you remember that day, but I was on the set with you. The futures were dead red down. And I made the prediction that the Dow would hit 25,000. And Andrew's head exploded. He's like, well, but you correctly pointed out, that wasn't that heavy a lift, and we did hit that, not in 4 years, but in less than 2 years. And what I'm seeing, Joe, is a beautiful situation where we will hit 50,000 on the Dow, and we're going to have a broad-based recovery in the S&P 500. The market's trying to find its bottom now. The thing I would say to retail investors is don't get panicked out by all of this. And what the president could have added to that fine truth was the fact that the biggest tax cut in American history, the broadest base tax cut in American history, is coming within a matter of months. So any discussion of recession seems silly when you factor that in. Plus, the Fed is not going to do its job, but the long bond is doing it. We're lowering our oil prices, which is just amazing.
Right.
And here's the one other thing I want to say macro-wise, Joe, because look, this is all about people worried about global recession. That's what they're worried about. The restructuring that's going to happen, Joe, globally, is going to start with China and Vietnam and Germany, heavily export-dependent countries. They're going to have to engage significant fiscal stimulus to reorient their economy. So that thing is going to go on. In the meantime, we're going to boom
here. I think they're much bigger than most people thought. And I think from policy institutes on both sides of the aisle, the methodology that was used has been universally derided as being non-serious. I don't know whether you know exactly who came up with the formula, but it allowed you to at least characterize most of these countries as being their tariffs well above the reality of the situation, so that when you say that we're going to do half on them, it was much higher than anyone anticipated. And I think you'd have to concede that this was not the market reaction you were looking for. There's a way of maybe incrementally trying to accomplish some of the things that the president wants to do in a reasonable, serious way. And this just almost across the board has caused what you're seeing in the stock market and a lot of head scratching and head shaking on whether anyone really knows what they're doing in this case, Peter.
All right, well,
Can you at least acknowledge that?
Sure. No, I can't, because here's what I'm seeing. You throw a lot of stuff at me. First of all, the methodology was perfectly sound. It was done by the Council of Economic Advisors based on long-term studies that are in the academic literature. And the people taking pot shots at us are the same people that always take pot shots at us.
The American Enterprise Institute, Peter.
Of course. Larry Lindsay. The American Enterprise Institute has been against it. Let's not get buried down in those weeds now. You asked me a serious question. Is the president willing to negotiate? What we have here is a national emergency based on massive chronic trade deficit caused by systematically higher tariffs and non-tariff barriers. So when you ask if we're willing to negotiate, the president will always listen. But let's understand what the problem is. When you have a country like Vietnam, let's take Vietnam. When they come to us and say, we'll go to...
By the way, this is really one of the more important parts of what Peter Navarro said yesterday when he's specifically talking about Vietnam. This is keen. It appears keen in the strategy here from this administration.
Zero tariffs. That means nothing to us because it's the non-tariff cheating that matters. Let's do Vietnam, Joe. They sell us $15 for every $1 we sell them. About $5 of that $15 is China transshipping to Vietnam to evade their tariffs. What does Vietnam do? They dump into our markets, killing our shrimpers, our people who make metal brackets, kitchen cabinets, agricultural products. They engage in intellectual property theft. They have the biggest number of cases aside from China at the Department of Commerce on the dumping. So the point is, anybody who wants to come to talk to us about lowering your non-tariff barriers. Vietnam has a 10% VAT. Europe has a 19% VAT. We can't compete against that. We have tried at the World Trade Organization since the 1970s to get VAT tax relief, and they've told us no every single time. We've won case after case at the World Trade Organization on things like our agricultural products, pork, beef, and corn.
Peter,
and they
I think the thing we're all trying to understand is then if there are going to be negotiations and you're saying zero is not enough, what is enough?
Zero is a small first start.
What is enough? Let me ask you, but related to that.
But let me answer that question.
So before Peter Navarro answers that question, this seems to be the strategy of the administration. And it's not completely disconnected from what we've heard from the president. We heard it during the campaign cycle, and we are seeing it now roll out now. And I made this point last week when we talked about these tariffs. There are obviously, and we've talked about the short-term pain, the short-term implications of these increased in tariffs, which will, yes, undoubtedly lead to some, at least short-term potential, increase of goods and services that we consume, things that we purchase. Trump has made the point for multiple election cycles now that the United States is getting taken advantage of in the quote-unquote free trade market in which we live. And you heard the point from Peter Navarro about a country like Vietnam, who has a major trade deficit with the United States and who is being essentially used as a middleman to import goods into the United States from China. China is completely walking aside some of their tariffs. Of course, they're not shipping everything through Vietnam, but they are walking aside some of their tariffs by using Vietnam as a middleman, to wash essentially Chinese goods. They import them into Vietnam, then Vietnam imports them into the United States. Therefore, the big-time tariffs that are on China, which I've got some news on, we'll get into those details in a couple minutes, those tariffs are essentially nullified. And so when the argument being made here by Peter Navarro is, when Vietnam comes to us and says, we'll reduce our tariffs to zero, that's really not the root cause of the issue. And that's why I wanted to play, and I'll continue to play, some of this interview from CNBC yesterday, because it really shines a light into what the actual strategy here is from this administration. Will it work? That question still remains. Will this be something that is successful and a profitable venture for the administration, for the American people? We don't know yet. The cat is unfortunately not out of the bag yet. We don't know how this is going to work out. So more from Peter Navarro on CNBC yesterday morning.
Okay. Yeah, so let's take them one at a time. We got plenty of time. So what is enough? Okay, you take any given country, they're like fingerprints. They all cheat us in a different way. So here are the things they cheat us on. Some of them engage in currency manipulation. Some of them have a hefty VAT tax. All of them dump into our markets. All of them engage in heavy export subsidies and government subsidies. All of them put up these phony technical and phytosanitary barriers to our ag products and our autos, right, and everything in between. Many of them steal our intellectual property. A lot of them run sweatshop labor, including forced child labor. They have pollution havens. So when you say to me, Ed, what do we want from them? We want fairness. We don't want them to kill American workers by inundate us with this non-tariff cheating. And it would be really refreshing to have the media talk more about that. This zero tariff thing, it's a misdirection. No, it's a misdirection. It's the non-tariff barriers.
What that suggests is that there's going to be a lot bigger challenge in terms of actually then getting to yes, if you will, or finding the off-ramp where a deal is made, given that we're not just talking about getting to zero. We're talking about getting all sorts of other policies inside each of these countries changed. Yeah. My related question, I don't, maybe they're unrelated, related, is you have talked a lot about how tariffs, and the president's talked a lot about how tariffs can be helpful as a tax, effectively, as a way to raise revenue here in the United States.
Tariffs, and they do raise revenues. They will. I see them as a tax cut, Andrew, because they're going to help pay for the biggest tax cut in American history. Every dollar that we extract from foreigners who are cheating us is going to go to the American public in the form of debt reduction and tax cuts, including, for example, in our auto industry. Anybody who buys an American-made car is going to get a healthy tax cut. We were given $7,500 away for EVs made partly in China. That's crazy. If Donald Trump gives away money for American-made cars made in Akron and Flint and Detroit, that gets our manufacturing
base
back.
Peter, just stick with me, though, for a second.
Sure.
Either we can collect those revenues, and by the way, there's other people who think it'll be a tax on the American people, but let's just put that aside and assume that you can collect revenues. Either you're collecting revenues, and that's the goal, or you're negotiating with these countries to get to not just zero, it sounds like anymore, but something very different than that. But those two goals seem to be at odds with each other.
Not if you look at it as a movie rather than a snapshot, Andrew. The goal here, ultimately, is to have people make things here. Remember, the president has said early in
Austin.
The president has said early and often that the best way to avoid tariffs is to just come here and produce. I mean, if you look at our auto industry, right, we're an assembly line for German engines and transmissions right now. That just doesn't make any sense. In World War II, we won that war with our so-called arsenal of democracy. We can't do that anymore. We've got parts all spread all around the globe, and if COVID taught us anything, those supply chains are not resilient. They're not reliable. So I take your point, but I'll tell you, we're going to get to a place where America makes stuff again. Real wages are going to be up. Profits are going to be up. And look, it bewilders me right now in the sense that if you're just looking at this chessboard, it's the market's going to find a bottom. Time to layer in. And if you look at all the good things that President Trump is going to bring you in terms of tax cuts, deregulation, lower energy prices, lower interest rates, and the world restructuring in a way which is going to be healthy. I mean, how many conversations have we had about China moving from an export-dependent parasite on the world to an economy that actually serves its own people rather than keeps...
Peter, you talk about tax cuts. Do you know anything about letting the top marginal rate...
This gets into a discussion over something that Navarro claims he has nothing to do with talking about tax cuts and things of that nature. I just... You know, listening to this yesterday, watching it live and re-listening to it again this morning and now hearing it for a third time, the point that Navarro is making is pretty much what you've heard puppeted from President Trump. And this is an attempt to bring manufacturing back to the United States. Now, we did see, and we do unfortunately have evidence under the first administration, that those increases in tariffs do not necessarily bring manufacturing back to the United States. I mean, Trump tried this in the first go-round with Peter Navarro, was specifically looking at steel. The idea was increase tariffs on steel and allow more steel manufacturing in the United States. That did not play out the way that I assume the administration wanted it to. You ended up seeing, while yes, there was a slight increase in steel production, you had major layoffs in other sectors due to the increased cost of that input that steel is into the supply chain, right? Because steel is used in so many different products and so many different goods that you and I purchase or are purchased in general. And so is it still a gamble? Yes. Are there still some major questions that surround the administration's attempt here to bring this kind of free trade environment back? Now, of course, the argument, and I think it's a valid one, that this is completely against free trade, I think is a valid point, right? When you're talking about increasing major tariffs and barriers, that's completely antithetical to free trade, sure. But there appears to be, at least from what we're hearing from Peter Navarro, again, the architect behind all of this, there is a bigger discussion that is taking place on the United States being taken advantage of on the national stage.
Okay. Not involved in. I can talk tariffs till the cows come home. Hey, Becky,
okay,
how are you?
Let's talk a little more about the tariffs, because this idea of who's getting hurt immediately. Oil prices, oil's fungible. They can go elsewhere to buy oil. Things like soybeans, corn, wheat, that could be picked up from other markets too. Brazil is very happy to step in and supply some of those things. Farmers here are already getting hurt, already asking for relief like they got under the first Trump administration. If we are raising these tariffs, taking that money and simply turning around and paying the people who are getting hurt with it, how does that benefit the economy, particularly if it leads to a downturn in the economy that costs people jobs?
Because, Becky, it brings home our domestic manufacturing. I mean, that should be patently obvious to you. That's the whole point.
That takes years. Are we asking people to be patient for years?
That's another one of the debates. How long will this take? Brian of the UAW stands up on Liberation Day, almost steals the show from the boss, and he says he's lived through this whole thing. He watched the factories go away. And now he knows that the factories are underutilized. There's brownfield investment that can be made in auto parts factories that are still there. And it won't take long.
Even brownfield will take 18 months to 2 to 3 years, I think, Peter. That's the question. That's a long time to get things back up.
I remember what I did working in the pandemic, and we were looking at PPE N95 masks that were going to take 6 months to get factories done. You know, we did it in 2 months. GM got us ventilators in 14 days. So don't tell me that America doesn't have the wherewithal to move things. That we can do stuff. But look, the big picture here. Let's not lose sight of the big picture. We got a $1.2 trillion trade deficit this year. We have since the trade war began, when the world declared war on us back in 1979, we've accumulated $18 trillion of money we've had to transfer into foreign hands. That's about two-thirds of an annual GDP. That is totally unsustainable. And what we need to be able to do is stop that for our national security, our economic security. And the way to do that is to get our manufacturing back. And that's what we're all about. And let's understand the problem. They charge us systematically higher tariffs, but the bigger problem is the non-tariff cheating. They suck our blood on that.
Peter, let me ask you this. Elon Musk, who the president has described as a genius repeatedly, basically came out over the weekend and said at least implied two things. One, that he's not in favor of these tariff program the way it's structured currently, suggesting he wants it, you know, he wants zero across the board. But he also took a shot at you and took a shot at you personally. Have you spoken to him?
No, but we'll speak. I'll probably see him today in the Oval. It's no big deal. Here's the thing. It's like Elon.
But what do you tell Elon? Why is he, if Elon's against this, he's so smart.
Let me finish here. I'm just about to tell you. Look, Elon Musk and his Doge team is making a contribution to America in terms of waste, fraud, and abuse. And that's a very good thing for this country and the American people. When it comes to tariffs and trade, we all understand in the White House, and the American people understand, that Elon's a car manufacturer. But he's not a car manufacturer. He's a car assembler in many cases. If you go to his Texas plant, a good part of the engines that he gets, which in the EV case is the batteries, come from Japan and come from China. The electronics come from Taiwan. The tires come. What we want, and the difference is in our thinking and Elon's on this, is that we want the tires made in Akron. We want the transmissions made in Indianapolis. We want the engines made in Flint and Saginaw. And we want the cars manufactured here. It's like this business model where BMW and Mercedes come in to Spartanburg, South Carolina, and have us assemble German engines and Austrian transmissions. That doesn't work for America. It's bad for our economics. It's bad for our national security. We want them to come here. And with Elon, it's fine. He's a car man. He's a car person. That's what he does. And he wants the cheap foreign parts, and we understand that. But we want him home. We want him home,
Peter,
for our national security and economic security. And everything's good with Elon.
That interesting comment there on Elon specifically, you know, he's not in favor of this. And I think Navarro lays out the case why. Right. And this is, you know, he talks about what's going on in South Carolina with some of the major plants that have been built down there. You know, these companies get major incentive to, quote unquote, build cars, build products in the United States. And according to Peter Navarro, but what they're doing is they're just shipping in parts from all across the world and assembling them in America. Right? None of the products, none of the parts are being made here. You're essentially just, you know, doing a jigsaw puzzle once you get everything imported into the United States. Right? You're building Legos. You're not producing, you're not manufacturing anything, and that seems to be the big holdup for this administration. If you want to have things sold in the American market, they need to be produced and made in America, not just assembled in America with parts from all across the globe. Again, whether that's right or wrong, I'm not opining on. This is the argument that is being made by the administration and why you are seeing a tariff structure in the way that you are. More from Peter Navarro. Almost done with the clip here.
Do you expect deals near term, or is this like a... If the market really gets in its mind that this is a 6 month or a 1 year exercise, I don't know how much stabilization. I don't know if your 50,000 prediction is going to come. I mean, do you expect deals to be announced this week with the president?
I expect the market to quickly find a bottom. I expect
without any deals
people.
From the president or without any. Is it possible
yes, Joe,
he says
what
let's
we're
do
doing,
a 30 let's do a 30 day hiatus on some of this
I've
and
told
let's talk
you, Joe,
it over with all of our trading partners to see if we can get somewhere before we do it. Is that possible?
By the way, that's a terrible idea. The idea that we're going to do a 30-day pause. I mean, here's the thing with what we're watching right now. You've got this tariff plan rolled out by the administration last week. You have two options. You either go all in with the tariffs or you don't do them at all. This concept from Joe over at CNBC of a 30-day pause is the worst possible thing that you could ask for. Again, whether you are in favor of the tariffs or not, the administration needs to stick to its guns on. And if they're going to put these reciprocal tariffs in place, which they did over the weekend, they need to stay in place. And you probably saw maybe yesterday around 10 o'clock, there was this fictitious report out of CNBC of all places that claimed that there was going to be a 90-day pause on tariffs. That sent the market skyrocketing. It all turned out to be fake news, a fake report from CNBC that was broadcast to the world. Then the markets, of course, went back down, recorrecting on the news. But you can't start and stop this. If the concerns that Peter Navarro are bringing up, some of them very valid, I argue most of them very valid, you've got to stick with it. You can't hem and haw on these tariffs. You either put them in place or you don't. Because when you signal to the rest of the world that you're just going to put a pause on it if the U.S. market is hit by it, if you signal to the countries that you are trying to bring to the negotiating table, countries that you are trying to bring to the United States to say, stop taking advantage of us in this trade war, stop taking advantage of us in this free market trade environment in which we operate, you can't do that when you're going to potentially put things on hold every 30 days when the stock market goes down 2.5%. Right, you can't do that. This idea is absurd from Joe, I always forget his last name, over at CNBC. Tariffs are in place. The administration is full course ahead on them. But there's no wavering away from this. If they do, they might as well not do them at all. You got to either stick with this or get out. It's really that simple.
All right, hang on. Again, let me finish these thoughts here. I mean, first of all, it's the president's decision. Second of all, I've told you that the most important thing is for countries to come to us not offering zero tariffs, which is disingenuous because it won't get us anything, particularly with countries like Vietnam. What they have to do is tell us they're going to drop all their non-tariff cheating. And as you said, that takes a little time here, okay? We got a $1.2 trillion deficit. But in the meantime, Joe, let's not lose sight.
Peter, I just want to ask you about breaking news. We're about to end the show. End the show, and I just want to ask you about some breaking news. The EU's von der Leyen is saying that we are now ready to negotiate with the U.S. on tariffs. We are ready for a good deal, but ready to take countermeasures. We will set up import surveillance task force. Is this a negotiation that you think will bear fruit, that we could see lower tariffs as a result of?
All right, let me say the Financial Times is going to run an op-ed of mine today, online, in print tomorrow, which addresses some of that. And what I would say to the EU, when you make those announcements, would you be very careful to tell us you're going to lower your non-tariff barriers? EU, drop your 19% VAT. EU, respect the WTO's decisions to let us sell us our pork, our corn, our beef. You don't do that, EU. You dump stuff in here. You're using export subsidies. You steal from the American people every which way is possible. So don't just say we're going to lower our tariffs. That's a good small start because you know your tariffs are higher than ours. But the bigger problem, this is the thought I want to leave with everybody, the bigger, by orders of magnitude, is the non-tariff cheating. And that's got to stop. So that's what we want to hear. You start talking that language, we'll see what happens, as the boss says.
Well, so there you go. There's Peter Navarro. Again, I think a very succinct discussion on the tariffs that have been rolled out by this administration. Again, in favor of them or not in favor of them. Hearing that discussion on what was, I think, safe to say, a relatively hostile crowd over on CNBC who are not in favor of the tariffs that are being put in place by the administration. They seemingly are unwilling to agree to any of the points that Peter Navarro made. And I've had on the screen the entire time. Look at the market futures this morning. Dow futures up 830 points. Was that 600 or 800? 830 points. 2.17%. S&P futures up almost 90 points. 1.75% there. NASDAQ over a 1.5% in pre-market trading this morning. Now, we did see yesterday that the international markets got hammered, and taking a look at those this morning, they seemingly have kind of relaxed. They have come back down. You look at some of the world markets and the things that are open right now. Things seem to seemingly be stabilizing on that a little bit. The the Chinese stock market is up about 1.5% today. The Australian stock market up 2.27%. The CAC, that's over in France, almost 2 percentage points today. The DAX, that's the German stock market, up 2% today. Some of these are still live because I think those markets are still open. Italy's stock market up 2%. United Kingdom, the FTSE 250, 2.75%. The FTSE 100, 2.13%. So, yes, it was a couple of rough days, Thursday and Friday. Yesterday didn't end up being anywhere near as bad as experts maybe not only were thinking was going to happen, but potentially hoping would take place. I mean, the Dow finished down yesterday less than a full percentage point. The NASDAQ finished up in the green 0.1%. And the S&P was down less than a quarter, which, you know, is not an insane day on the stock market. And so whether or not you are in favor of the tariffs or whether or not you are agreeing with what the administration's doing, they seem to know what the issue is. They have called out the issue. Not only the tariffs, but the non-tariff barriers. He talks about the VAT, the value-added tax that exists in the European market. Talking about those issues, and that's the concessions that they want. They feel that the United States is being taken advantage of on the global trade market. They feel that the United States is being taken advantage of when it comes to importing and exporting goods across the country, and they want individuals to come to the table willing to discuss those issues, willing to discuss some of those non-tariff trade barriers. Will those individuals come to the market? Will those individuals make and give the United States what they want? I don't know. You would hope so. I mean, you look at China's market. Of course, that's one of the biggest, and I've got some news on that here in a minute. But you look at China's market, they can't exist without the United States. There's no place to ship any of the crap that they make. They've got to import it into the United States. They don't have a choice. Their entire economy is propped up on selling cheap crap goods to the United States. By the way, goods that you and I consume. I mean, you're going to, maybe you'll be on Amazon later today buying something. That good is most likely coming from China. We are infatuated with cheap Chinese crap. And so China needs to continue to have that trade relationship with the United States because there's no way to sell any of the goods without it. There's only so much that the rest of the international market is going to buy without the United States. So the administration claims we don't live in a free trade environment. We are being taken advantage of, either countries being used as a middleman to skirt tariffs that are already in place, which, by the way, I'll note, you know, one of the only things that Joe Biden kept in place after the first Trump administration when he came into office was Donald Trump's tariffs on China. So put that out there. Countries cheating us by being a middleman. Countries cheating us with non-trade, non-tariff related barriers, whether it's a value-added tax or other sort of restrictions on imports. The United States wants to see that come back to fruition. The United States wants to see some of those barriers lifted. And from all accounts and what I was reading yesterday and checking on this morning, those lines of communication have opened with many countries. What will the end result be? It's not immediately clear this morning. Hopefully it's something that's a good deal for the United States and gets us back into a position where we can get back to actually free trade. So that is what I'm tracking on that this morning. I want to encourage you to head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig if you are enjoying the program Monday through Friday live 7 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, and X, or listen to the podcast after the fact throughout your busy day. Head on over to patreon.com, patreon.com/Nick Craig, and you can financially support the show. $5, $10 a month. You get access to daily show notes and more. All of that available over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Trump is very serious about this stuff. There was some back and forth with China yesterday. I'll have those details coming up in a few minutes as the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Tuesday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Keeping up to date with the latest trade tariff talks. That's been all the news over the last couple of days. So yesterday, China, last week we announced brought to you that China announced that they were going to retaliate to the United States with their increase in tariffs, with a 34% increase of the tariffs that they've already got on the United States. So China announced a 34% increase on their hikes. That caused President Donald Trump to post this on Truth Social yesterday. Quote, "The United States will impose an additional tariff on China of 50% effective April the 9th. So coming up here tomorrow. Additionally, all talks with China concerning their requested meeting will be terminated." Right. So China is trying to ratchet this up. They claim that they are ready to take whatever measures are necessary to fight Trump on this trade war. They said that they will, quote, fight to the end and take countermeasures against the United States. I don't see this working out well for China. I mean, you talk about a global trade war. That's it. That's it manifest and played out in its highest possible level. Trump and the administration is sailing straight ahead with these tariff talks. They are not backing down. The administration knows there's going to be hardships. The administration knows that it is going to cause issues within the U.S. economy, right? I mean, we were looking at stock futures a little bit earlier this morning. I mean, they're looking pretty good right now. Dow futures up almost over 860 points as it stands right now, almost 2.3%. So things are seemingly recovering after a couple days of uncertainty. But Trump's not going to back down on this fight. He is frustrated with this. It is something that he has written about and spoken about for 40 years at this point. He wants to bring manufacturing back to the United States. What does that look like? How does that play out in practicality? Again, I don't know. The administration seems to have a plan. I don't necessarily agree with all of it, but I'm willing to give them time to see how it plays out. And that's where I'm at right now. I think, you know, some folks on the left, of course, watching CNBC a lot of the day yesterday, they want this to continue. They want Trump to back off of this tariff conversation. They are inherently globalists. They are okay with the United States being taken advantage of on the international stage as it relates to trade. They are okay with the United States continuing to come second to all other countries in this wacko leftist globalist society in which they want to live. And they're willing to dog Trump, dog the administration, people like Peter Navarro as much as possible. I mean, these individuals, I'm sure privately, they're rooting for a stock market collapse. I mean, they're rooting for this to go so terribly wrong so they can beat up on the Trump administration. These people want a recession. Let me say that again. The individuals that I think are fighting tooth and nail against this, those on the political left, they want a recession so they can say they were right and Trump's an idiot, he was wrong. That's what they're hopeful for. That's really, truly what they want. That's what they're interested in. It's obvious from the way in which they speak about this issue. It's obvious from the way in which they are communicating with their audience, whether it's their readers, their listeners, or their viewers, depending on the media outlet and the form of communication. But they are all interested in that. Yet you look at some of the headlines over on these websites this morning, and, well, things are looking a little bit different. Here's the headline over at CNN published 40 minutes ago. U.S. stocks set for a major bounce back from their tariff doom spiral. Great headline over there at CNN. Doom spiral. Right, so things seemingly are already course correcting. How much damage done remains to be seen. So we'll watch the markets today. We'll watch the tariff discussions today. We'll see what China does. We'll likely see some continued escalation on that, and we'll have all the details coming up for you tomorrow morning. Taking a look at some other news today, a major win for the Trump administration as the U.S. Supreme Court ruled yesterday on President Donald Trump's request to vacate a lower court's ruling barring the administration from using a 1798 wartime immigration law to immediately deport Venezuelan nationals, including alleged members of the Tren de Aragua gang from the United States, a significant victory for the administration. Justices on the high court ruled 5-4 to grant the administration's request to lift the stay in a temporary victory for the administration and their allies. At issue was the Alien Enemies Act from 1798 or the immigration law passed by Congress that year to immediately remove certain migrants from U.S. soil. Prior to Trump's second White House term, it had been invoked just 3 times in the United States, during the War of 1812, during World War I, and most recently, World War II. Lawyers for the Trump administration had argued the court to vacate the lower court ruling, arguing in a Supreme Court filing that the lower court orders rebuffed their immigration agenda, including their ability to, quote, protect the nation against foreign terrorist organizations and risk debilitating effects for delicate foreign negotiations. There you go. So the issue that we have been talking about for quite some time now finally came to the surface. Unelected judges, appointed district court judges, attempting to shut down an administration for invoking powers that they absolutely have. Again, you can think the Alien Enemies Act is stupid. You can think it's a bad policy decision for the United States. You can think that, or you can feel that you don't want that done, but it doesn't change the fact, which is it was a law passed by Congress in 1798, and it's something that gives the authority for the president to remove people from the country. Again, feelings and everything else, they're irrelevant when it comes to this. We're talking about, very succinctly, is there a law on the book that allows this to take place? The answer is yes. A Democrat left-wing activist judge allowed this decision to be stayed, put a temporary restraining order, temporary halt on this because they disagreed with it politically. But again, we're not having a political conversation. We're not having a political discussion. We should be having a discussion over whether this is legal or not. And the state's, the country's highest court has in fact ruled in favor of the administration. Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, posted in a video on X yesterday saying, quote, "Today's a bad day to be a terrorist in the United States of America," adding that the president, quote, "was correct in using his authority under the Alien Enemies Act to deport terrorists out of this country." Attorney General Pam Bondi called the landmark decision a, quote, "victory for the rule of law," adding that activist judges in Washington, D.C., quote, do not have the jurisdiction to seize control of President Trump's authority to conduct foreign policy and keep America safe, saying, quote, "the Department of Justice will continue fighting in the court to make America safe again." There you go. Vice President J.D. Vance saying this is a major loss for the lunatics and a major win for the American people. Onward. So this is the whole really situation kind of wrapped up. And it's going to be very interesting to see how many more of these cases play out in the same way. Right? We've seen with the vast majority of executive orders that this administration has signed, that the president has decided he wants to bring forward, that he is in favor of, that he wants to push as part of his agenda, how many more of these will end in this same way? Now, this does not excuse the greater problem. That problem still exists. And the problem is a very simple one. Unelected, politically associated and affiliated judges acting in a hyper-partisan manner to usurp the authority of the President of the United States. But that's still the larger issue that has not been solved. That is still something that the United States Supreme Court is going to have to, I believe, still going to have to ask themselves. Now, we saw John Roberts' weak, lame comments back 2 weeks ago now about just, hey, man, hey, dude, follow the process. That's still not sufficient enough for me. Right? This is a temporary win on this case in the United States Supreme Court. But this does not solve the greater problem. This does not solve how are these unelected judges dealt with. How does an administration who is acting under their authority given to them by Congress, is specifically dealing with the Alien Enemies Act, how do we go forward with that? How do we, as a United States, as a democracy, as the left always loves to talk about, right? How do we go forward with dealing with these judges? How do we go forward dealing with these out-of-control courts? The argument's been made, hauling these people in front of Congress, making them justify their ridiculous actions, making them justify their ridiculous rulings. I think that's a pretty good start. And if they're unwilling to do so, then maybe it's time for Congress to look at the funding to this to these district court systems, right? There's 13 districts across the United States. I think we're in the fourth U.S. Circuit or fourth district here in the north. It's either four or seven. I don't remember which one it is. But maybe Congress needs to look at revoking some of the funding there. Right, because these judges don't have the authority to tell the president what to do. Now, if the president is breaking the law, if the president is acting in a way in which he does not have the authority to act, that would be a different conversation. That would be a different discussion. But this Alien Enemies Act story really is the shining example of an executive order rolled out by the president that he unequivocally, without a doubt, has the ability to do. Again, a law passed by Congress. It gives him the authority to do so, blocked by a judge because he disagreed with it politically. It is the shining example of what's wrong with the district court system, where you've got these individuals that essentially believe that they are the president of the United States. But that's how they're acting. They're acting as if they were the ones elected in November of last year. They are the ones deciding whether this administration can go forward with their policies, with their agenda, with the things that they believe are important, and in many cases, things that are important to the American people who just voted for this president. That issue still remains this morning. However, a massive win for the administration. This is one of many, many executive orders and other sorts of decisions from the administration that have come under major fire from left-wing activist groups and left-wing judges. And, well, the Supreme Court stepped in, did their job. They have frozen that order, and now these individuals can once again begin to be deported. We'll see how all of that plays out. Finally, this morning, yesterday, got some good comments on the Utah protest that took place over the weekend. There was protests all over the United States. The hands-off day, as Democrats decided to run around and spend their Saturday screaming about Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and everybody associated. I caught this clip yesterday on X. Byron Donalds, who, of course, is a representative, a congressman from Florida, who also happens to be running for governor in the state of Florida, had a run-in with some protesters standing on the on a side of a road yesterday somewhere in Florida. Once again, there are some less than ideal language in this clip, but it just goes, this is another shining example of why the left is losing on the issues that they are. And another example of the left being unable to succinctly describe what their issue is. To be able to articulate what are the major policy issues between the left and the right and why their party, why their decision makers are better going forward in leading the United States. So this is Byron Donalds going back and forth with a couple of wacko leftist protesters yesterday. Take a listen to this.
As a member of Congress, because I was just in D.C. on Monday for Trans Day Visibility, and I would like you, as a member of Congress, to rise up and support LGBTQ plus youth and stop this fucking insane attack on our children who know who they are.
Number one, no.
Of course you're not, because you're a fascist. You're a trace. You're a race traitor, and you are a fascist.
Wow. So she claims that Byron Donalds is not standing up enough for some trans visibility leftist wacko bullshit that comes out of their political party. And when Byron Donalds really doesn't say anything, she responds with, first of all, you're a race traitor. Byron Donalds happens to be black. So he's a race traitor and he's a fascist. You see why the left has an issue here? Do you see why the popularity amongst the Democrat Party from vast swaths of the American voting population is not in favor of the left right now? Byron Donalds, who literally hasn't even had a chance to respond to this woman, is now being called a race traitor and a fascist because he didn't stand for Trans Visibility Day or whatever stupid bullshit she's talking about. I mean, it's absurd. It's insane. It's totally nuts. How quickly these individuals spiral out of control. But she was in D.C. standing up for youth who know that who they are. Minors, individuals under the age of 18 years old that are being pumped up with hormone blockers by their wacko leftist liberal parents so that they can change their gender. And Byron Donalds isn't standing up for that. So he's a race traitor and a fascist. Now that escalated pretty quickly. More from this lovely woman out of Florida. More of her great comments there for the congressman out of Florida.
You call me a fascist, you call me a race traitor, and you want me to agree with you? What are you talking about, ma'am? I'm a constitutionalist. I believe in freedom and liberty for everybody. Yes. I believe in a U.S. Constitution. I believe in everybody's freedoms and rights. But if I don't agree,
hold on.
I don't agree with you, then all of a sudden I'm a fascist. That's what's wrong. If all you want to do is yell and scream and curse when I don't agree with you, I'm sorry, ma'am. You are now in the 20% of America.
You don't need to worry because you will never get my vote, and you don't live here.
I'm going to be your governor.
No, you're not.
I'm going to be your governor. Great line there from Byron Donalds. Again, apologies for the language. What he said there was, I thought, really great. You and I have a disagreement over an issue. In this case, it's, abusing children and pumping them up with hormone blockers and changing their gender at, 9 years old, because that's a popular policy issue for the left right now. You disagree with that policy. You disagree with trying to change somebody's gender at 9 years old, right? We don't trust these individuals to vote, to drink, to drive, to really do anything meaningful in society at the age of 9 years old. You have essentially nothing that you can do at that age. But the left wants to change your gender and believes that that is something that is fruitful going forward. You disagree with the left because that's an insane thing to believe, and you're immediately a fascist. And what Byron Donald said there was great. This is why people aren't supporting you guys. You disagree with somebody on something, they're a fascist and a race traitor and a Nazi and all of these other things that the left continues to cry and scream over and over again. The left is incapable of debating the issues. And it's why I continue to make the point that the Democrat Party is falling into non-existence. I truly believe this. Because their policies, their ideas are no good. It's really not, to me, it's not a complicated issue. The left does not have good policies. The left does not have good ideas that are in favor with the vast majority of American people. And so when you disagree with them, when you bring up concerns over trying to turn a 9-year-old boy into a girl by pumping them up with hormones and giving him gender-affirming care to tell him that it's an appropriate thing to do at that age to change your gender. When you bring those things up, when you question these things from the left, well, now you're a race traitor and a fascist. And the Democrat Party wonders why they're having issues. The Democrat Party wonders why individuals are flocking from that party. The party is wondering, why are people not siding with us on these issues? Because you guys are, first of all, the ideas are crazy. I mean, that's from the start. The ideas are nuts. So we'll start with that. But secondly, you're unwilling to have a debate on it. You're unwilling to talk about the things that you believe are so important that you're traveling from Florida to D.C. for Trans Visibility Day, whatever the hell that means. So you're so invested in the issue that you're traveling, 1,000 miles from, depending on the part of Florida, up to Washington, D.C. But when you're questioned on it, when somebody tries to engage in conversation with you, they're immediately a fascist. They're immediately a Nazi. In the case of Byron Donalds, he's a race traitor because he does not believe it is appropriate for this woman to pump up a kid with hormone and puberty blockers at the ripe age of 9 years old. This is why the left is failing. This is why the left is failing to garner support from the American people. These people are verifiably insane. And these are their big ticket issues. I mean, you think that the left has got all of these great policies, but these are just the ones we're seeing? No. This is it. This is the thing. These are the issues that they want to fight tooth and nail on in front of the American people. And Byron Donalds even brought up the 80-20 rule. Yep, this lady falls into the 20% of American people. It's probably less. But the 20% of American people that think that this stuff is completely freaking insane. Because, well, it is. It's completely nuts. And so this is how they are deciding to conduct themselves. This is how they are deciding that they want to push their issue forward in the grand scheme of things. It's a really, really stupid idea. I think this is very short-sighted by the Democrat Party. I think the political implications and ramifications of this long term are major for this party. And I think that they're going to continue to deal with major political election issues because of it. This stuff is not popular. Looking at everybody that disagrees with you, pointing to everybody that disagrees with you and calling them a fascist, calling them a racist, calling them a race traitor, calling them a xenophobe or this a phobe or that a phobe is a very short-sighted political strategy by the left. It is not going to garner support. It is not going to encourage American voters that the Democrat Party is the party that has the winning issues. It is very, very short-sighted. Now, there's a civil war obviously brewing within the Democrat Party. I think that's blatantly obvious at this point. There is a major power struggle going on in this party. where individuals on the far left side of the political aisle are attempting to take over power from individuals who tend to be more, I'll call them mainstream, but somebody like a Chuck Schumer, who, while I disagree with him on policy 99.9% of the time, knows that this stuff is political suicide, knows that this stuff is a political disaster for the Democrat Party. If these are the issues that the Democrats are associated with, somebody like Chuck Schumer knows this party is going to get annihilated in the midterm elections. So he is trying to fight this out while this group, smaller group, but still a very vocal group, tries to usurp itself and take over power. It's going to be very interesting to watch and see how this party continues to play out over the coming weeks and months, really leading up to the midterm elections. Well, a busy Tuesday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us live 7 o'clock on YouTube, Rumble, and X, or 24/7 wherever you get your podcast. That's going to do it for the show this morning. Watching tariffs and trades throughout the day, plus a busy day in the North Carolina General Assembly. We'll have it all for you coming up tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning, right here on the Nick Craig Show. Have a great Tuesday.